Could you please define the concept of checkbook diplomacy and how this works throughout the Asia-Pacific region in regard to China and Taiwan?
Well, checkbook diplomacy, a bit like checkbook journalism, refers to offers of cash made to politicians in Pacific Island governments throughout the region by, in this particular case, China and Taiwan. Now, you know, these offers of cash can be very difficult to prove, and there are all kinds of allegations. Taiwan's aid is quite self-interested in developing fisheries and infrastructure to support that. And China does likewise. It, you know, sends medical teams to some of the smaller islands. But a key point to bear in mind with Taiwanese and Chinese aid is because of the competition between the two and the fact that they're trying to influence local decision makers, often they don't need to spend a great deal of money to do that. It can be a handful of people in the smaller countries. But because they are trying to buy political influence, the aid is very much targeted at that elite. Although there is some development aid for resources and some infrastructure to support that, most of the aid becomes part of the struggle between Taiwan and China in the Pacific. Goes into, you know, very prestige, kind of visible projects. You'll remember after the Fiji summit that Vanuatu was offered a new plane and Papua New Guinea a multi-million dollar sports stadium. That's all very well and good, but it's not the kind of development aid that leads to long-term development that's going to benefit ordinary people and provide jobs and income for them.
Joses Tuhonuku ran against and lost his seat in the parliamentary election to the former ambassador to Taiwan. He says this control from afar is damaging the very psyche of his people.
People in Solomon Islands start to feel that they are losing control of their country. And these people no longer, I mean, apart from the fact that they are really corrupting the system systematically, they hate the fact that they feel that they now control the whole country. Not only that they dominate the economic life of the country, but they now will decide, using the power of money, they would decide who should be prime minister instead of the people who have been elected by the people of Solomon Islands. I think that is the thinking, and that's why they were targeting business houses and so on during these riots and unrest last week.
There were, day by day, people who conveyed to me and to the group that I was travelling with really quite serious concerns about the involvement, in particular, of the Taiwanese government. There was a view expressed very often that the Taiwanese are too close to the political process in the Solomon Islands, and that whatever their involvement is, and it does involve large sums of money, that it just wasn't transparent enough, and that there was just a general feeling of negativity to the process that is followed or isn't followed by the Taiwanese in having an influence there.
Liberal backbencher Mark Ferguson was in the Solomons for the parliamentary elections. He is one of the many voices calling for more transparency in foreign aid and assistance.
One of the ways that I've suggested in the past that the Taiwanese could make a more positive contribution is to continue their financial support of regional and community development on the Solomon Islands, but perhaps to be more transparent about that. And if, in a show of genuine good faith, to offer their funds through recognised reputable development agencies like AusAid or even RAMSI, the Regional Assistance Mission to the Solomon Islands. And by doing so, they can continue to demonstrate to the world community that they are committed to the Solomon Islands.
What you saw in the Solomons with the rioters was resentment and a protest at the lack of development at the level that's going to benefit, you know, the 500,000 ordinary Solomon Islanders instead of all the benefits just accruing to a small political elite. You know, a small political elite do very nicely.
While Australia and New Zealand are beginning to publicly lambast the two Chinas over some of these tactics, aren't our own motivations somewhat questionable?
Well, it depends what you mean by questionable. I mean, Australia has its own national interest in seeing stability in the region. It doesn't want these islands to be taken over by organised crime. We've always taken the view that it's best to keep problems like that as far from Australia's shores as possible. And happily, for ordinary Pacific Islanders, Australia's national interest in seeing stability and long-term growth and development in the region will benefit them as well.
Australian politician Michael Ferguson, who was over there for the elections, observing, come out and say, Why doesn't Taiwan funnel its aid money through a legitimate organisation, transparent organisation such as Ramsi? Is that a maybe more a fair and equitable way of distributing the money?
Yeah, there have been calls that one way around this problem of Chinese and Taiwanese aid is for it to, A, you know, become more transparent. It's very hard to get a precise figure on the amount of money that we're talking about that gets splashed around the region by Taipei and Beijing. They don't publish official figures, so that's the first point. The second is there's been some suggestion that Australia should attempt some joint ventures with Taiwan and or China. I think the problem with that, you know, is Taiwan and China are following their own domestic political agendas, and this kind of active diplomacy, visit diplomacy, checkbook diplomacy, unfortunately, is part of that. And I think it's going to be very difficult to get the transparency and joint ventures that people are calling for.